Welcome to the Spiritual Shit Podcast with your host, Alia Lovely. This is a place where we discuss the spiritual, the mystical, and the magical of the human experience. I will give you personal insights on this podcast and interviews and card readings to help you think about the critical questions we are facing in these complicated times and to shed light on the concerns of the collective. Here, I will take what was woo-woo to the mainstream, so no topic is ever off limits, to have authentic and thought-provoking conversations to help you think about spirituality and how it affects our humanity in a variety of ways. We will laugh, we will cry, and most importantly, we will think about our inherent resilience, transformation, perseverance, and highlight the limitless possibilities that exist within each of us. I want to inspire you to push beyond your own limits of comfort and strive for an open mind, no matter the odds. I hope to encourage you to embrace your potential and pursue your dreams with an element of fun, spirituality, and humanity. Remember to like and subscribe to never miss an episode and review and share so others can be inspired as well. To connect with me personally, go to thelovelyalia.com or join my Patreon at patreon.com/thelovelyalia for behind the scenes extra content for the show and our monthly forum to find like-minded souls to discuss your own spiritual journey. Follow me at Instagram at thelovelyalia as well as YouTube for video podcasts. And thank you so much for joining me on this journey. So let's get into today's episode. Hello there. I'm just going to pop on here real quick to let you know that as a listener, I really appreciate you. And so if you would like to check out any of my services like mediumship, family astrology readings, card readings, and the like, then you can go to thelovelyalia.com/services to book a service and use the code LISTENER for 20% off. They are first come, first serve, and I usually run out of appointments pretty quickly. So take this as your sign to meet with me. I hope I see you soon. And I hope you love this episode. Hello and welcome to another episode of Spiritual Shit. I'm your host, Alia Lovely. And today we have my internet friend, Sharin Eskandani, coach, wellness expert, decolonization certification person. Love you. Hi.
Hi, my love. I am so excited for this. I was actually hoping, I know there'll be so much information and good stuff in this episode, but because we're friends, I was like, okay, don't go down tangents. Don't do the things that we, which anyway, I know the tangents are usually where the amazing stuff is, but I'm like, okay, try to be at least a little bit professional. Remember, this is a podcast that... But I'm so grateful to be here, and especially in this relaunch of Spiritual Shit. I love this podcast. I adore you. Mm-hmm. And I just feel so grateful and honored to be here and sharing space with you and your amazing community.
Thank you, Sharin. So y'all probably already know, if you've been following our podcast for a while, Sharin's been on the podcast before, but me and Sharin have also done some incredible work together. We had a course called Manifest Them that just retired, but has done a lot of great work in the world. And me and Sharin have never actually met in person. We've just been internet friends for a very long time. And like, as soon as I come to New York, like, we're going to make it happen. We're going to meet up. It's going to be great. But Sharin, you do incredible work in this world, and the way that you allow and make people feel safe and understood, and I know for myself, when I entered into the wellness spaces and I started to become very spiritual, like, there weren't a lot of people who looked like me or had very similar experiences. So when I met you, it was such a breath of fresh air that we had so much that we could connect on, so many things that we had in common. And I think it's important to note at the beginning of this podcast that for a lot of you listening, there's going to be some uncomfortable conversation that we're going to have today around decolonization and wellness and spirituality and all those good things. But I think it's important for you to listen to this podcast, even if it makes you uncomfortable, because we need to have these uncomfortable conversations so more people can feel included and we can evolve as a species, but also ascend as a soul. So that said, with a disclaimer, Sharin, you are, in my mind, are an expert on wellness and mindset. You have such an incredible way of breaking things down, which is like, I only seem to feel like I want to bring people on the podcast who can really break it down, really put it in a place where people understand it. But before we get to that part, we want to know about you and your background, and why is it that you have such a passion for mindset, helping people with their mindset, and also with the decolonization process in spirituality?
Oh my goodness. Well, thank you for that intro. I would never call myself an expert. I'm a constant student, which I know you and I really share that with the work that we do. I'm always, always learning. So I came to wellness, you know, a little bit, I don't want to say later in life, but I came to wellness always wanting to be in the wellness world, but never feeling like I belonged in the wellness world. And so this was, you know, like 10, 12 years ago when, you know, things have changed a lot, but the face of wellness, I think the most popular faces in wellness were, it was quite white. And at the time I didn't know that's why I didn't feel like I belonged, but just something felt off about it for me. So I'll give a little background about, you know, how I got here. So I'm an immigrant. My family immigrated to Canada when I was quite young from Iran. And I'm very proudly Iranian. And I also know that my experience as an immigrant and what I experienced as one of like a handful of kids of color in a predominantly white town and neighborhood has really affected who I am. I grew up never feeling fully like I belonged. One, because here I am, this girl with this very, very different culture. I also looked very different from most of the kids that I went to school with. And so for me, the way in which I tried to fit in was through perfectionism and people pleasing and overachieving, which is, I think, what many of us do when we feel like we want to find our community and our people. We find that we are seen and praised when we do things at a level of what do we want to call it, quote unquote, excellence or beyond that, even too, right? Mm-hmm. So here I am kind of trying to fit in and I'm adopting these things. Well, oh, it seems like I get attention when I'm really good or I do this really well. And then during this time, I also discovered music and singing. And so my first love was music. I come from a very musical family. I joined a choir when I moved to Canada and I just loved it. I loved it so much. And it was where I felt the most myself, the most at home. And I kind of threw myself into it. You know, this is something I really, really loved and enjoyed. And I was very fortunate as well that my family supported me in that. However, I also pursued that love with that same mindset of perfectionism and people pleasing and overachieving. Mm-hmm. And, you know, those, I call them coping mechanisms because they are, right? Unfortunately, they're applauded and praised in our society because, right, we end up doing these amazing things externally. Meanwhile, internally, we're crumbling, right? And we can only do it for so long. So I was really pursuing my love through this mindset of I have to be the best. I have to do this perfectly. And when I was kind of living in Canada, I went to undergrad there. That was manageable. I could do that, right? I was kind of a big fish in a little pond, lots of great singers there. And I was one of those getting lots of praise, lots of attention. So then I was like, great, I'm going to do my master's in New York. My dream from when I was a little girl was to sing at the Metropolitan Opera. Like I knew that this was what I wanted to do from a very young age. And so getting accepted into a school in New York for me was like this big dream come true. One, because it was an excellent school. And two, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm one step closer to my dream. And so I, in my early 20s, moved to New York to do my master's. And it was the greatest wake-up call of all time because I realized that I was not shit. I moved to New York and I realized everyone was amazing at what they did. Everyone was a hard worker. Everyone was an incredible singer and everyone was incredibly driven. So all of these things that I thought made me unique and special no longer were unique and special about me. And instead of kind of looking inward and saying, okay, Sharon, maybe we need to reassess this plan, this mindset you've been pursuing this with. I didn't have those tools or that knowledge then. So I kind of doubled down on what worked before. So I became even more of all of those things. And that worked for quite a while. So I graduated from my master's and I was a handful of students who I started working right away. I was working all over the world. I was working in Europe. I was working at stages and places where I had dreamed of. I was singing at Carnegie Hall. And it was amazing, right? And while externally and on paper, my life looked incredible. And people would say, oh my God, she made it. She reached her dreams. She did it. I felt miserable. Mm. I was exhausted. I was, you know, and it was like this thing of this, this dissonance of I'm living my dream and yet it feels like a nightmare. Mm. And looking back now, I realize it wasn't, you know, what I was doing. It wasn't singing or the career, even though it is very demanding, but it was how I was pursuing it. My mindset in pursuing it, it left no space for enjoyment. It left no space for grace or compassion or kindness. I was always focused on what I wasn't doing well, what I could be doing better, what jobs I wasn't getting, who was getting those jobs, right? So it was exhausting. And it was at my lowest point where I was like, I don't even know if I want to do this. And really feeling like, oh my gosh, the thing that I loved now is the thing that I really have such a complicated relationship with. Like there was a lot going on. It was at that low point, I got the call I'd been waiting for forever. My manager called me up and said, Sharin, the Metropolitan Opera wants you to sing in Carmen next season. Ooh. And for those who don't know, the Metropolitan Opera is kind of like the Olympics of classical singing. Mm-hmm. It's like all of our dreams, most of our dreams to sing there. And I'll never forget that moment because I had imagined that time, right? We all have something we dream of. And I'd imagined that moment. And I always thought that I would, you know, feel so happy and excited. And I would finally be convinced that I was like good enough and that I'd made it. I'll never forget hanging up the phone and realizing that I didn't feel any of those feelings. And it didn't convince me that I was enough. It didn't convince me that I had made it or any of that. And so in that moment, I woke up and I realized, okay, nothing outside of you is ever going to fulfill you or make you feel enough. That's actually you. It's an inside job. You have to be internally working on that. And it was a really amazing wake-up call because I realized I needed to work on what was going on inside. And so I had a year and a half to prepare for the job. And of course, I worked on my voice, but I really focused on what was going on internally. So mindfulness and mindset. And I started working with a coach. I'd gone to therapy. I love therapy. I wish we all had access to therapy. But coaching really shifted things so much for me. And I say to this day that my greatest achievement in life isn't singing at the Met, but it's singing at the Met and enjoying every part of that process. So It was amazing. So when I messed up, I wasn't like this terrible human to myself. I wouldn't hold it against myself when things went left. Like I could just be present and grounded. And I found this love of coaching then through that process. And I was like, wow, this is so powerful. And so I really got into it. And this was when I really got into like the world of wellness. And I loved so much of what I was learning. And also looking back, and I would love for us to have a conversation about this. I recognize so much of the harm I was also experiencing in the world of wellness. Like I always say to folks who ask me who my first coach was, I say, you know, they served me and I'm so glad for what I learned. And also I would not recommend you work with them because I now recognize some of the harm in the spaces that I was in. And, you know, we talk about things like mindset. I think a lot of the issues in the coaching world, especially in mindset, is this idea of just like simply positive thinking or making people feel like if your life is terrible, it's because you're thinking terribly and it's your fault. Not acknowledging systemic issues in how our lives manifest, right? Mm-hmm. This is something you and I really believe in, which is like, yes, manifestation is absolutely a real thing. And also systemic oppression is also a real thing. And so we have to have an open and honest conversation about that. I witnessed so much appropriation of different cultures and also this erasure of where things come from. And this feeling, especially as this woman who I'm Middle Eastern, you know, you hear like Rumi quoted, you hear all of these things from the Middle East. However, I felt like my culture and my people weren't good enough in a weird way, right? Because all these people yeah, it's all these people talking about it are white and privileged. And that's not my experience. And when we talk about things like mindset and we don't talk about trauma, we are making people feel like if something is difficult for them to figure out mentally, then there's something wrong in mindset wise, then there's something wrong with them. But also many of us have experienced trauma. So it takes a little bit more time and grace and patience to shift what we believe. So all of these things to me, again, at the time I was like, something is off. Why am I the only person of color in this space? Or why are all these people on the stage white and talking about all of these Far East, East Asian, South Asian, indigenous concepts, and no one's talking about where it comes from? Why am I listening to someone talk about mindset and making this person feel like they're at fault for their life being a certain way? But I was like, no, but these tools work. Like these, the tools work. There's something wrong with me. So I have to figure out how to take these tools and make them work. And once I figured out, yes, the tools work, and also we can bring in our own humanity and lived experience, that's when I think for me, wellness shifted so much. And when I decided to become a coach, sorry, this answer became much longer than I thought it was going to be.
Girl, you already answered two of my questions. Like, we go ahead, keep going.
When I decided to become a coach, I to myself was like, I am going to create spaces that are accessible to all. And I feel like another issue in the wellness space is when we say the word accessible, it means money. Mm-hmm. Yes, it can, but accessibility also comes down to how we talk about things and what we talk about and who is talking about it, right? So all of these things also are part of accessibility and inclusivity. And I have a feeling why you and I have the audiences that we do is that we have this very accessible way of talking about these things that everyone wants to know about, wants to embody, wants to learn. Of course, everyone wants to manifest. Of course, everyone wants to shift their mindset. However, if we are talking about it in a way that is not acknowledging multiple lived experiences and histories and what's going on in the world, then we are letting people down. It's right. Not the other way around, right? So I knew when I started coaching that I wanted to make this work as accessible and inclusive as possible. And I'm so glad you said that that's kind of what comes across, because I do believe that this work is for all of us. And I do believe that this work is rooted in indigenous and a lot of marginalized cultures. I mean, it's, you know, so this is a time of also, I think, reclamation for a lot of us who identify, as folks of the global majority. And so, yeah, so that's where I'm going to stop. We can talk, I can keep going, but that's kind of how I got to where I am here today.
Mm. Well, first of all, audience, don't you just love her? Like, it's like, you make my podcast job so easy. I could have just been quiet the whole time. There's so many things. Like, as my lived experience and getting into spirituality, I noticed very similar things. We have very, very similar parallels. I didn't come from Iran, but came from the hood into a, you know, a suburban neighborhood, had a similar experience in middle school to high school. And always just feeling other, you know, just not feeling like part of the gang. And so when I started to go on my spiritual journey and started to show up in wellness spaces, started to learning about mindset, the secret, you know, and so on, it was amazing, because it was like, oh, like there's something here for me that really resonates, but the spaces that I was in just didn't feel like that. And actually, what's really funny is when I went to Bali, it was like, I was just knew I was drawn there for a reason, to have this like spiritual experience, but mostly because I saw that Elizabeth Gilbert had that experience. And I watched Julia Roberts ride through the rice paddy, you know, fields or whatever. And I was like, yeah, that sounds good. So I show up there and immediately I'm like, where are the Balinese people? Where are the Balinese healers? Like, I'm seeing loads of like Australians, people from Brooklyn, like loads of people, white people here. I don't even see Black people like that many, you know, like, and I'm just like, where are the Balinese people? Where are the Balinese healers? Who do I go see for all of these spiritual, you know, practitioners, things that I want to engage in? Nowhere to be found. And I was like, okay, is it like word of mouth? Is it like a secret, like knock on a door kind of thing? Like, could not find anyone. So I was participating and watching this, and something about that kind of turned me off, because I was like, there's a lot of gentrification happening here. There's a lot of colonization happening here. People are buying land. They can't buy it. I think that they get like a 30-year lease or something like that. But good on them, for Bali, for doing that. But they're just being this kind of like, oh, look, it's cheap here. Let's take over. Let's do this. Let's do that. Ooh, it's spiritual. And all of the things that we were experiencing, the sound baths, the chi, that, you know, like whatever, no homage to the surrounding areas, no practitioners that were included that get that money, because like people are like coming to Bali charging American dollars for these particular services. And I'm like, what certifications do you have? What lineage has this been passed down for? You know what I'm saying? Like, it felt flat. So that happens also when I go to Tulum, same thing, like very similar copy paste kind of thing. So when, and this was obviously before I went there, but when you would go into yoga spaces, things like that, it was just like, why is it that? And the way that I was asking in my, you talk about the colonized mind. We're going to get into that in a little bit. But like in my own thinking, I'm thinking, why don't Black people come to stuff like this? Why aren't there anybody else who wants to come to something like this? Why do I feel comfortable going to it, but other people don't feel comfortable going to it? And at first I thought it was a me, us problem. When then I started to reflect and go, wow, like when I'm in these spaces, like I don't feel welcomed, or I'm like, ooh, invite the Black friend, almost Black friend, you know, like come over here. Like, see, look, we have diversity. And then you become the token. Will you be in our newsletter? Will you be in our picture for this? Da, da, da. And I'm like, ooh, no. When I used to work at a college, my first job, my first real job, salary job, I worked at William Jewell, a private school. And they were having a lot of diversity like backlash because they were like, there's nobody who goes to this school who looks any different. So when I started going there, I started being put in all the brochures. And then when I started working there, they put you on the front face and they're like, we're going to send you to all the Black areas and you're going to go pitch these huge, you know, packages of private school to these underprivileged communities. And I was like, this feels like a miss. Because those people are not looking at school and going like, yeah, I'll pay $40,000 a year. With what money? And it just felt like, this is out of touch. Y'all don't see what's happening here. It was just to show, like, show face. Like, look, we're doing the work, but not the underwork that's necessary to give actual access. So anyway, I've experienced that my whole life. And when we start talking about this topic, I think a lot of people get really prickly because when we talk about wellness, a lot of people don't want to also look at the depravity that goes into our current spaces. You talked about money earlier, the access and money, and how a lot of people are utilizing this for, you know, their own profit, basically. And that, hey, people need to make a living. I understand that more than anybody. However, it just feels like a huge disconnect from the kind of work we're trying to do. And you talked about people having different lived experiences. Like, what really turned me off about some of the stuff is that it's like, oh, you're just not thinking positive enough. And it's like, yo, like they don't have their next meal. They're living in a war-torn country. They're going through a genocide right now. Like how is that their own mindset? Like, what did they do to deserve something like that? How did they pull that onto themselves? But when you live in a space of privilege, it's easy to see it that way because things have just been that way for you. So you expect that it should be for others. Can you speak to the decolonized mind, the idea of like how we've existed in Western cultures and how it's created a type of mindset for ourselves that is perfectionistic, capitalistic, and also often shields us or causes us to look away when we see different lived experiences that feel uncomfortable for us?
Yeah. So many great insights and the experiences that you share. Like I'm sure so many people listening are nodding their heads because I certainly am alongside you. So, you know, when we talk about concepts, like, first of all, unfortunately, the word decolonization now is slowly becoming co-opted, mm-hmm. right? Almost like the word trauma informed or somatics. Like people are like, oh, this is cool. This is important. I think it's great. There's more attention coming to it. I think it's really important. All these things are needed. But I also think there's not a full understanding of what it means. And I think when we hear the word decolonization, sometimes I think people think it's like, oh, I'm just going to like stick it to the man. And that's what it is. For me, one of the greatest explanations of decolonization or colonization in general. So when we think of colonization, we think of the brutal occupation of land, right? The people are coming in, they're going to take over a land and that's theirs. But you also have to understand is that when you occupy a land, you also occupy people's behavior and their habits, their customs, and their dreams and their imaginations and what is possible. And so colonization is not just about what's happening externally. It's also an internal process, right? The way in which colonization works is that a certain set of beliefs come into play in which this system is okay. The system in which we are oppressing you is okay, which it's absolutely not. The human spirit knows it's not okay, right? But there has to be a way for which it to happen. And so that was one of the greatest explanations someone said to me, listen, Sharon, colonization is not about just land. It's about occupying and colonizing what you believe to be possible for you and what you believe is possible for your communities and your future. That really shifted things because I was noticing when I was coaching was that a lot of people were coming to me with the same dreams. Like people were like, oh, I want to go and get my MBA or I want to go back to, it's like MBA in school are the two big ones. And I was like, okay, cool. That's a wonderful dream. That could be your dream. But I started to realize that people were dreaming within this box of possibility of what they were being told is possible for them.
Yeah.
And it wasn't about moving beyond the box. And that's what colonization is afraid of, right? Is when we go beyond the boxes, because then we start to recreate and reimagine what our futures can actually be. A lot of us are imagining a future that is within this box that our families, but our society, but really the dominant culture is telling us to do. And so for me, decolonizing myself is about really asking myself the question of, is this really my belief? Is this really my desire? Is this really what I want for myself and for my life? And it takes a lot of work to really get to what the answer is. And sometimes the answer is really scary, because if it's a no, then that means possibly, definitely going against so much of what you have believed to be true and so much of what the people around you in your community have told you to be true. And regardless of where you come from, what you look like, what your background is, we all have an inner colonizer within us. I love this term, inner colonizer. It was first introduced to me by Emily Brandt. This idea that there's like this little part of us that really wants to conform and feels uncomfortable by not conforming. So, you know, in our culture, which is white supremacy culture, things like, as you said, perfectionism, being an expert, the idea of not being in community, right? You have to be an individual. You have, especially within the world of business, you're always told like, you have to be the one who knows the thing, or no one wants to work with you. And if you acknowledge anyone else, then you're not as like smart.
The world.
You know? And this idea of overachieving and hardworking and not valuing things like rest and ease and joy and community, these are all conditioned beliefs. Now, if those are your beliefs because they're your beliefs, cool.
Great.
That's okay. But for a lot of us, we haven't sat down and questioned like, is this actually how I want to live my life? Do I truly believe that this is the best thing for me? And so that is kind of how I describe kind of the process of decolonization. And it is a process, it's a constant process. It's one that like, you don't even know when it'll pop up because it's just so kind of unfortunately ingrained within us. So it's a constant. But that's how I would kind of describe the decolonized mindset or mind, or what it just even looks like to decolonize anything. And I think it's very necessary in the world of wellness, because this is about us becoming our fully realized selves.
Right.
Who is defining what that means? Mm-hmm. Fully realized, right? Who is defining what that means and what that looks like? And I really think for those of us who are committed to this work of growth and healing, that's going to look different for each of us. And we have to figure out what that means.
Ooh. I have chills. I just, there's so many things I want to say because like the dream component, like that being really big, the idea of what does it look like? What does it actually mean for us to be our full authentic selves and who's defining that for us? I think that in a lot of ways, you know, given everybody's background and what they've been through, that plays a very large role in their mindset and what they think is possible. And even if we do come back to that tool of like positive thinking and the way that you see things, there's definitely an element to that that's necessary, that is a very valuable and real tool that you can use. But without looking at the trauma, without looking at the background, without looking at where that person comes from or how they feel in that space or whatever, we don't access the blocks that they may have that we can help coach them out of without any awareness around it. It's why when I started to go to different healers and so on, that I was like, ooh, this just doesn't sit right. Like, I know I believe in this, but like the way that they're going about it is making me feel very much like the villain somehow. and all the things that I've gone through where I was very much the victim. But not to be like, but I would hear that victim blaming or like, you know, oh, you have a victim mindset or it's a scarcity mindset. And I've been guilty of doing that before, even in my own coaching practices. But the what's interesting, so this is a dumb example, but UFOs, right? UFOs, the Native American tribes have talked for ages about the star people and how they've come in and how they've been here. But now that we live in this Western, you know, like colonized space, no, UFOs don't exist until we say they do. So now that the government's come out and been like, oh, UAPs and whatever, like, okay, now it's okay to believe in them. Now it's okay to entertain it. But those who knew about them, worked with them, did, you know, whatever work, whatever you believe in, you know, that it was invalid. Oh, it's just a savage practice or something. I heard somebody say that the other day. I was like, oh my God. When we look at our politics, you know, the whole bit, right? This is coming up for me, the dream aspect, because what we think is possible for us is what we see happen in our communities. It's what we visualize and see other people doing. I don't see a lot of Black Tony Robbins, like what you said earlier. I don't see a lot of Black Brene Browns that are getting up and doing that. We do see them, but not as frequently, as prevalently, and they're not getting the same sales or the same attention or whatever. I noticed the difference in when we talk about something like this, what my plays are versus someone who's like, you can have it all. And this is, you know, like, it's just whatever kind of pets that existing verbiage, that existing structure of belief that's there, it just seems to like really, really take off. So people think they have to conform because this is the only way to be successful. If I can just be perfect at this. I know when it came down to my podcast, like if there was a mistake on the audio, which like say, you know what? I haven't even checked. Sometimes my computer will hook to a different microphone and then it will sound like crap. And I'm like, I can't air it, even if it's a really great episode. But the shit that I feel afterwards, like, oh, I'm such a horrible person. Oh, I should have known. Oh, I should, you know, like, it's like, man, you would sit down and tear. Why? It's a free podcast. Like, nobody's coming here to take my job. Like, you know, like, yeah. Why is it that I feel like I need to assign myself that level of stringency or reprimand? But it's mm-hmm. because you have this lifetime of always needing to fit inside a very small spectrum of who society expects you to be or comply with or acclimate into in order for them to feel comfortable with you being there. And I think mm-hmm. that for a lot of us practitioners, that is where I struggle because it's like, I go into spaces, I go to do a fair. Hey, okay. I'm the only one here. And it's like, great. They need to see my face. I should be here. Like, but that feeling of other that you get, or sometimes the, you know, when people pass your booth, like when David was out front of my booth, the amount of people that came by went down. Mm. My dark skin husband, you know, or caramel skin husband, whatever you want to call, it went down. Like I was like, people don't want to stop by because there's a Black man standing in front of here. Mm. And I noticed it, I clocked it. And David was like, I'm not paying attention to that or whatever. I'm like, you're not, but I am.
Yeah.
That there's a problem. That makes me feel away, you know? So even within the space, I felt uncomfortable. So all that to say, like Veda just got into preschool and I'm really excited about her going to preschool. But while I was in line at 6 in the morning waiting, I didn't see any other Black parents. And I was like, okay, like I get that the school that we're going to and the area that we're in and whatever. But immediately that fear shot up in me that like she's going to feel some of the same things that I have felt about being in surroundings where people don't look like her. And like, I get that this podcast is not about like living in an area where people don't look like you. However, those ideals for a lot of people carry over. Like, in say you're white listening to this podcast, but you were the only one who couldn't afford Calvin Klein jeans at the time or whatever. There's this otherness that we feel when we don't have that conformity, you know, in check. And even to my thought, I was thinking like, well, shit, I'm going to really have to do her hair every day because the teachers will treat her nicer if her hair looks nicer, if she looks more quote unquote kept. If her hair is like nappy that day or whatever, it's like, I can't just send her out of the house. She might not be treated very well because I know that I experienced that. And so this other that a lot of us feel, how would you speak to that? The ostracization, I don't know if it's what's the word? Say it.
Ostracization.
Thank you.
Such a hard word.
That's a really hard word. I don't know if it's so much of that because it doesn't seem to be as ill-intentioned as much as it's ignorant.
So I want to name and highlight a couple things you said that are related and also just I think really need to be highlighted. One is something you mentioned about finding yourself in wellness spaces and just having a certain off feeling. I really want to acknowledge that because I want anyone who is listening to hear that, that if you are in any wellness space, and I do not care how recommended this person was or how many reviews they've gotten or how many followers they have on Instagram, if something feels off to you, doesn't feel right to you, then that is just not the right person for you. And that doesn't mean to say that what they are talking about or the tools they're using are not helpful, but maybe that's not the right space for you. Because I know for myself, I gaslit myself so many times in the spaces I found myself in because I was like, oh my gosh, but this is like, they've published X amount of books. Like right. I went to a workshop that Byron Katie did. Byron Katie has created the work, which I think is really powerful. I use that myself. However, there was a woman on stage who was talking about a very abusive circumstance with a parent, and they were trying to come to terms with their parents passing. And the way in which things were being spoken about, I was like, Byron Katie is making this woman take this abusive relationship and like make her feel like she had the response, you know, because the way the work works is that you like self-reflect it back onto you. It was one of the most uncomfortable things I have ever been part of. And yet everyone was nodding their heads. I was looking around. I was like, well, I guess there's something wrong with me because this tool has helped me so many times. So then I guess this is how it works. So I want to really just emphasize for folks that if something feels off to you, it doesn't mean the tool is, you don't have to throw out, what is it, the baby with the bathwater. Like it can be still a great tool. However, maybe the way in which you use it is a little bit more nuanced and is a little bit more sensitive and again, brings in life experience to it. And the second thing too, that I have also experienced is that just because a practitioner may look like you does not mean that they cannot cause harm either. Yeah. Because as you were saying, like, you know, a Black Tony Robbins or a Black Brené Brown, yes, 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 let's have all the representation. However, also, I have been in spaces in which practitioners of color are upholding harmful and toxic ways of doing this work.
Because of the conformity aspect.
But because we just don't even know, because we think this is how you do business. This is how you run a wellness practice. These are the tools that work. And this is how I saw Byron Katie do it. So this is how I'm going to do it with you. And it's almost, if you are a person of color listening or a marginalized person listening, it's, and you found this yourself in this situation, it's like doubly as painful because for a moment you put down your guard because you're like, I am in a quote unquote safe space. Like this person looks like me. Of course, they're not going to cause harm. And then when it happens, it's, I can't even describe the feeling, but it's like just the ultimate betrayal because from certain folks, you're maybe waiting for it to happen. And if it doesn't happen, you're pleasantly surprised and happy about it. But when you're in a space with folks of color, you don't expect it. And so I will also say that, right, that just because you are or who you're working with is a person of color doesn't mean that they're not upholding kind of these same ways of being, where they're just telling you, oh, you just have to think more positively. And right. I don't care that you come from a really difficult background. So did I, and I did this. So you can do it too. Right. Which is absolutely right. Like Oprah, we praise you. We love you. Also, she's a little bit problematic, but like, these are the things, right. That it's like, and so I wanted to really, really, name those things.
Yeah.
And you know, when you talk, yes. But when you're talking about like ostracization, my gosh, you picked
such a hard word. Word. I read books.
I think though, when you talk about that, for those of us who have ever felt marginalized, now, whether that is because of where you come from or your socioeconomic background or the way that your brain works, right? Whether you're neurotypical or neurodivergent, right? There is this need within us to conform because we want to belong, right? This is like whatever Maslow's hierarchy or whatever. It's like we instinctively, and we need this, is to find our communities and to belong. And so I know what it's like at the beginning of your wellness journey, and not even sometimes the beginning, but at points in your wellness journey where something just resonates so deeply with you, a teaching or a person or a practice. And you're like, this is the space for me. And so we put up with the bullshit. And it's a lot of the times we're like sifting and sorting through it unconsciously. And it comes to a point, I think, where it becomes really conscious, where like we just can unsee it. And I think that's hopefully when we make the decision to maybe remove ourselves from those communities or people, or just take what we like from it, which is like what I hope we all do. We should all be, nobody is an expert, right? Cherry pick from everyone who you really resonate with. But, you know, I think that ostracization actually, unfortunately, works to the benefit of a lot of toxic people.
Yeah.
Right. They want you to be part of the community. You want to belong. And so you put up with a lot of bullshit. So for me with coaching, and I know with the work that you do, right, there's so many negative stereotypes associated with it. Like I remember when I first started working with a coach, this was a little over 10 years ago. It was like a dirty little secret. I didn't tell anyone because of all of the negative stereotypes that were associated with it, that it's a scam, that it's predatory, that it's manipulative, that people who work with coaches are weak and lost and they don't know what they're doing. And I want to say that things have changed. However, there's so many negative stereotypes still associated with coaching. And I know with the type of work that you do as well. Like, why would someone work with an astrologer or a card reader or an intuitive? Like, they're just taking your money. And that's not true. Like I've always said, the issue is not coaching. The issue is how it's being practiced, right? Mm-hmm. Because again, with a lot of these modalities, we talk about healing modalities, they are centuries old.
Yeah.
People have been coaching. People have been intuitively guiding people forever, right? Like this is not something new. You know, you used to call it an oracle or an elder, but we've always had folks that are akin to a guide or a coach, which help people during a transitional time because we do need help. We cannot do it alone. Mm-hmm. And yet what kind of happened was that this practice that was so innate and intuitive, intrinsic, and so powerful was kind of what I say, they copyrighted and trademarked its soul away, right? They made it into this thing. And I mean, we can get into the history of it all, but around the turn of the 19th century, what ended up happening was a lot of different movements in the US that were really interested in things like positive thinking and mesmerism, right? Like that idea mm-hmm. of hypnotism and mentalists. They kind of took all of these concepts that were in indigenous and marginalized communities of the global, cultures of the global majority. And they like whitewashed it down. They like took all of its soul away and made wellness into, if you think positively enough, your life will become better because you will gain status, richness, and power. Mm-hmm. Like if we really think about it, and that was like the turn of the 19th century, and we still see that now.
Yeah.
And that's where I think a lot of the negative stereotypes and ick, for lack of a better word, comes from, in this world of wellness. But again, like, it's not the practice, it's how it's being practiced.
Yeah.
That's the issue.
Yeah. Like my book, Meaningful Manifestation, which we just finished, thank God. I talk about that very much so, where we think about the way we manifest and why we manifest what we manifest, and why manifestation is not just about getting shit, getting money, it's like, we can manifest a perspective. We can manifest healing. We can manifest relationships, like things that are more meaningful than your next yacht or, you know, that Gucci bag. So being able to bring it back. And what's really interesting, it's almost like just recently I started to notice the way that our culture in America, at least, focuses so much on achievement. Everything is focused towards achievement. Everything is focused towards the next thing, the higher thing. What are you doing now? Like, what's next? You know, like, oh, once you're pregnant with your first baby, you're going to have your second one. When are you going to have your second one? Why are you talking about that? Like, let me be a person. Like, there's always this kind of looking towards the next thing. So then when I talk to clients of mine that are like 25 and they're freaking out because they don't have it all figured out yet. And I'm like, girl, you good. Like, it's okay. Like, I don't have it figured out. I'm 40. Like, it's okay. Like, we're all going to be evolving. My mom, she just started going to therapy. She's 65.
Oh my God. That's amazing.
So great. My dad will never go. And she's starting to learn stuff about herself that, you know, like, it's like, she's turning over this whole new leaf at 60 something years old. Right. So like, the way that we look at our life as if our 20s and our 30s are like the best time of our life, and then after that, it's all gone out the window. This is toxic culture. The way that we think about ourselves, like, as, you know, we have to be fit and tucked and, you know, like, everything has to look a certain way. Just looking at the way that people berate people on Instagram and how unkind they are. Like, there's something about our culture that is so broken, that the way that we exchange with people is so transactional, and we are no longer even in spiritual community. Like, I remember when I was in this group of girls, amazing group of girls, by the way, but I don't want to name the person. However, they were all listening to the same podcast, and there was something off. We'll say the off word for me about this particular person's podcast. And I was like, I'm good. Like, I'm sure these principles are great. I'm glad y'all are working on whatever. But one of the key components to the manifestation was that there are connectors in your life, and so-and-so can be a connector. And this is something that you exchange from someone. This is something that's going to help you level up. You're going to meet these people. But every time I heard someone say something about that, it felt yucky to me, because it was like, it's not that you're intentionally using someone, but it's with the idea that I'm gaining something from you. You're gaining something from me. There's a transaction at play, and that the idea that it could just be about the transaction and nothing else. And like, while I think that that's true, I do think that that has absolutely happened in our society. The idea of it, to me, was really salty. I really didn't like it. I was like, I don't like this idea. I'm a connector for you. Like, why don't you be my friend? I could very easily say, Sharon, you've been a connector for me. We've done workshops together. You're an incredible person. And like, I'm just happy to have you in my life. But because you're in my life, we get to have these amazing conversations and get to go over different things and like have these lived experiences together, whether it's online or not. And so like, but a lot of the people that I even meet on my podcast end up having this type of exchange. So I know it exists, but like you said, the tool is not necessarily the problem. It's the way that it's practiced. And so when we start looking at people as stepstones to get to where we need to go, we start utilizing people and connection as a means to an end and not the exchange itself. Like, does that make sense?
Yeah, no, totally. That is it, right? Like, I was, as you were talking, I was like, oh, our friendship, like, we struck up a beautiful friendship. And from there, we've created some really amazing things. Are you a connector? I guess you are a connector in my life, but that was never the intention. It was mostly because I just wanted to be in relationship with someone who was wonderful and genuine and authentic and fun. And that was you. And so, I think that that is a big part of wellness that sometimes throws a lot of us off. Yes, I want all of us to have all of the abundance, and that includes wealth. But abundance also includes a lot of other things. And what I see right now a lot in social media still is, again, the end goal is supposed to be power, status, and wealth. And those are, that's white supremacy culture. That's like us dreaming within that box of what they have said we're supposed to dream within. And I think that when we move beyond the box, and this is something you and I talk about a lot when we think about manifestation, that's where the amazingness is. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's like even more incredible wealth comes outside of that box. We don't know. However, it's where we have to be kind of trying to get to is beyond what they have said is what we should be achieving, what we should be manifesting, where our mindset should be taking us. So absolutely, yes, the tools, there's nothing wrong with the tools. Mm-hmm. It's just how we're using the tools. That is the only thing. So take all of the tools. There are some amazing, amazing tools within the world of wellness, but make them your own. That's like my big thing. And with decolonizing coaching, one of the things we talk about with our coaches and training is coaching. Wait, is about,
back up.
Yes.
You said coaches and training. Tell me yes. about your certification program. Oh, yes. And how that works.
Yes. So being in the world of coaching and really recognizing and understanding how powerful this modality is, it changed my life. I have now had the privilege of changing countless lives. It's such an incredibly powerful modality. And as I started to do it, a lot of folks would come to me and say, "Hey, what coaching programs, certifications would you recommend?" And I started to realize that, well, not yet at the time, I started to realize I could literally list off just a couple. And even those, like one or two, I was like, well, like this is good, but be careful of this. And I just started to realize that, you know, there is an issue in the coaching world, and it really comes to the education that coaches are receiving, but mostly kind of the lack of education that they're receiving. A lot of coaching certifications are focused like on a one tool methodology, right? So like, for instance, they'll teach you one mindset tool, and that's just supposed to work for everyone. A lot of coaching certification, which is like, we laugh at it, but like, it yeah. absolutely totally is a thing. A lot of coaching certifications are like a weekend long, or they don't have any practice component to it or mentorship component to it. Like, here you are like working with people through some of the most tender parts of their life, but you haven't had any practice. You've learned the curriculum, but like you haven't actually done it. And so I just started to become aware, and like coaching certifications don't even talk about trauma-informed coaching or diversity or inclusion, like any of these things. And, you know, as a coach, it's shocking. And I was like, okay, as coaches, as someone who really wants to be a coach, right? You want to work with as many folks as possible, and you want to be of service to people in a very genuine and authentic way that's going to help them, that's going to serve them, but you're not being given the actual tools to do that. Right. And so I was like, well, like someone should create like a coaching certification that's decolonized. And then I was like, oh shit. I think this is like my thing. I think this is me. The universe. Like I think. And so I set out to create a certification that now as a coach, I believe has all the components, right, to really be a coach in today's world. Mm-hmm. In which we are working with folks that come from different lived experiences. We are working with folks who are living in a world that is draining on so many different levels. We're working with folks who are, you know, wanting to fulfill their dreams and also be a global citizen, right? And so like, how do we do all of that? And so I created the Wholehearted Coaching Certification, which is a decolonized approach to heart-centered coaching. And a big part of our philosophy is that, you know, as a coach, we are not telling you what to do. We are helping you reclaim your own inner wisdom. And that's what really what coaching is. It's, right. And it's always been, It's not about, coaching is not about telling anyone what to do. It's not about solving anything for anyone. It's about illuminating to them that they have the answers, that they know what is best for them, and that they have the ability and the resources and the skills to make that happen, right? And as a coach, we help guide, support, keep accountable, whatever those things may be for that person. So it's really about putting the power back in the client's hands, which I think is unfortunately the opposite of what we see so much in a lot of coaching, the coaching world, like something like, my God, talk about twin flames, which is the absolute like abomination of coaching, which is taking the power away from people and making them feel like they don't know what they're doing and that they need this person or this thing to be able to exist in the world. And that's not coaching. Coaching is that, not that at all. So yes,
wait, tell people about that, because like, just in case you're listening, you're not aware, there's a documentary out there called Twin Flame Universe or something like that. What is that? What it's called?
I think so. There's two versions of it. I think right. There's one that's on two different streaming networks.
But anyway, you guys can go look it up and watch it, but it was absolutely insanity watching, this couple essentially lead this coaching group for people to find their twin flame. They guaranteed that they would help you find their twin flame. And then it became this whole thing where it was really abusive, like really like gaslighty. The people were like, well, I still haven't found my twin flame. And then they ended up turning it into this like, okay, well, you're actually a man and you're supposed to be paired up with someone within the group. And like, it was the, oh gosh, there are people who transitioned. Like, I don't know if it was on because they wanted to or not. Like, it was a lot. It was a lot. The whole thing just blew my mind. So those of y'all listening, that's what we're talking about. This is not coaching. This is not.
This is not coaching.
At some point, this man called himself Jesus. He was coming back as Jesus. And I was like, why does it always happen? Why does this always happen? Whenever, like, and I got my own personal beef with that. But it's like, we see these groups come together and turn into cults. And me and my David were laughing because we're like, you know what? We're just going to start a cult. We're going to tell everybody it's a cult up front that we're doing this for this reason. And then, you know, like, we'll all make money and we'll be fine. You know, like, just
listen, I would join your cult. I would join you and David's cult for sure. But you know, we have extreme examples of that, but then we also have things that are not so extreme. Like, they're a lot more subtle. Like, one thing we tell our coaches is to move away from the coaches who are like, in 6 months, you're going to be making seven figures and you have 100 new clients. These like promises that, yes, sometimes some of the folks in the group can reach those goals in that timeline. However, a majority of people won't be able to or can't because of whatever is going on in their life or whatever is accessible to them. But in those models, then if you can't reach that goal, you are made to feel like there's something wrong with you, that you didn't do that, right?
That way ask for a refund.
Exactly. You know, there was something wrong with, or it's literally in the contract that like, this is what we're guaranteeing. And if like, you don't, whatever, you're not getting your money back. Yeah. Or things that, you know, just using one tool. And if the tool isn't working for you, then being like, well, there's something up with you, because this is what you're supposed to do. And this is what you're supposed to focus on. So it can be a lot more subtle than just, you know, something like twin flames. So I created the coaching certification to, what I say, bring the soul back to coaching and reclaim what this modality can be. And my wish and my goal is that, you know, in 10 years time, when we say I'm a coach, people are like, wow, that's amazing. You know, I am colleagues with coaches. I train coaches. I am a coach. We're at a point still in the coaching industry where coaches don't want to call themselves a coach.
Right.
Simply because of those stereotypes. And it's not because they don't believe in the work they're doing. It's because of what is associated with this work. So my dream is that, you know, in 10 years time, that we have certifications like mine, we have coaches in the world who are working ethically with skill and with care, that the word coach is synonymous with, you know, an excellent level of care and guidance and assistance and support. Yeah.
That what's interesting about that to me is that, or what's coming up, I guess, is because there are very little aspects of certification that they don't find in our culture of colonized culture, there's no validity, to it without any kind of certificate. So within the system, we're even having to build like more, like, and I get why that's there. Like, I understand why that's there. When you have a license of some sort, it's like, haha, I did the work that shows that I'm, you know, not just a snake oil seller kind of thing. While you were talking, I was kind of laughing in my head. I was like, I wonder if I could create a psychic certification. I feel like that would be on a whole different other level of what we would have to develop in order to like actually verify that somebody could do that. But anyway, I just think that like in the coaching sphere, like, I think it's really important that people are aware that is accessible to them as a mode of help. My mom even was like, I don't think a therapist is for me. I would like really like to see a life coach. And I was like, really? I know a whole bunch. I think you'll get along with my mom really well. But anyway, like, I just feel like there is, like you said, like we're moving. It's not moving super fast, but we're moving in the right direction. Certification is great. And I'm really proud of you for finishing that. I know what a beast that was to undergo. But also I love how you said earlier, like who's determining this? Like who's determining what is certified? What is your most authentic self? And to have more people in the global majority getting to dictate what that is means that that spectrum gets larger, and that's good for everyone.
Yeah. When you say that, so, you know, I think that those of us who are called to do this work are already coaching. Like you are innately a coach. Like that's what I have experienced in my life is that the people who I know who are coaches have been doing this work. Like they're the person right. that other people turn to, like whether it's like the grocery store clerk or their best friend, there's just something about you where you love to be of service. You love to help people through those moments. It can sometimes feel a little overwhelming and much, but it's just, there's something innate about you. And so you have those innate abilities. And in the certification, it's what we are doing is amplifying those abilities that you already have. Right. And I think, again, some people don't need to be certified in something to do the work that they're doing. However, I also am aware and cognizant that we are in a world in which we need to have certain tools that can allow us to work with people. And people are people who have experienced trauma and people have experienced difficult life circumstances. And so it's really about helping you amplify what is innately within you. That's what I think a certification should do, right? And connect you with the guides and the mentors and the teachers. We bring like one part of the certification too, like talk about, I'm not an expert, is it's a community-led certification in that there are a lot of guest teachers who come in and work with the student coaches, because I think that's really important.
Yeah.
We need to be learning from folks of like all different areas of expertise or backgrounds. And so that's, yeah. So I love the certification. I think it's an incredible thing. The coaches who are coaching now who have graduated, and now we have our student coaches. I mean, the caliber of coaching is incredible. And it just makes me so excited for the future of coaching and the ripple effect that this work is going to have, because the coaches who are in our certification come from so many different backgrounds. Like I remember we had a guest teacher and was like, holy crap. After the call, they were like, that is one of the most diverse groups of people I've ever had the honor of doing this workshop for. Mm-hmm. And it just makes me so excited, because we also want to work with people that look like us or have experienced life like us. And the problem with diversity in the coaching world comes back to the certifications, because the certifications aren't being led by a diverse team right. of teachers and creators and all of that. And so I get so excited, because I'm like, oh my gosh, these coaches are going to then work with their communities. And then those communities are going to be like, so it's just the ripple effect is incredible.
Well, that is the work that you're doing in the world. I'm so thankful for you, Sharin, and that you came on our show and offered a lot of, you say you're not an expert, but I call bullshit. Just personally, because I've worked with you, and I just think that you have such a wealth of knowledge that needs to be seen and heard. And I'm so thankful that you're passing that on to other people to make a huge ripple in our wellness industry. So
thank you.
Yeah, you. Before we go, are there any last parting thoughts that you would like to leave with our audience about this area?
Well, I want to say that wellness and healing are for all of us. And I know that you're in this space, spiritual shit, because Aaliyah, you make this work so accessible and inclusive to folks. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you for the work that you do. And know if you're listening that, you know, if something isn't working or if you're thinking the problem is you, it's not. One thing is like, it sometimes takes some time and patience and grace with this stuff, but also sometimes the tools we're using may not be the tools for us at that moment in time. They may not be the tool that it's being, the way it's being taught. It's just, you have to just make it your own, right? That's okay. You can make something your own. And just keep continuing on this path and find the spaces in which you feel a real sense of safety and belonging and care. That's what I would also really, really reiterate. And if you are interested in becoming a life coach, a decolonized life coach, please come and check me out at the Wholehearted Coaching Certification.com.
Is it .com?
Yes. No, it's wholeheartedcertification.com. And we have an Instagram Wholehearted Certification as well that you can check out. And the wait list, we open up twice a year, and our wait list is currently open for our fall semester, our fall cohort. Yeah.
Beautiful. Well, thank you so much, Sharon, for being on the show. And those of you, I know y'all love this episode, so please share it with someone you love, and we will see you next week.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode. I really hope you enjoyed it. If you'd like to connect with me more, head over to patreon.com/thelovelyAaliyah so we can discuss your views about spirituality in our monthly meetings. If this episode spoke to you, please share it and make sure you tag me. And always, if you're looking for some spiritual guidance, you can always find me at thelovelyAaliyah.com for spiritual advising. Thanks again for listening. I hope you have a beautiful week, and we'll see you next week.